We are Two Guys Gaming. Hello and welcome. As always, even though we are under the Two Generations Gaming banner, this is one guy reading. Whether you meant to or not, you found Noob's Book Club. I'm Sean, Noob of All Trades from Two Generations Gaming, and in this series, I'm reading and reacting to Ready Player One, the novel by Ernest Cline. I've been off for an extended absence. Last week ended up being busier than I expected, or I just couldn't sit down to record, so I apologize for not recording for I think about a week and a half again. I hope to get an episode up today, one up Thursday, and one up either Saturday or Sunday to get caught up. And from the looks of it, I'll be done with level 2 and on to level 3 by next week. In this episode, I will be reading and responding to chapters 20, 21, and 22. Chapter 20. Wade logs into the Oasis. He ends up at the control center of his hideaway, I guess you would call it. He stood there trying to decipher the quatrain. Neither he nor anybody else, judging by the scoreboard, had figured anything out. Located under an armored dome on the rocky surface of his own asteroid, it gave him complete surveillance. Everything else existed below ground. He coded it all himself after moving to Columbus. He realized after the attack that he needed a fortress of solitude without neighbors. Designated S14A316, he renamed it Falco. Yeah, that Falco. Guy was like an 80s New Zealander or Australian rap artist, I don't know. But he only picked it because it sounded cool. Not that he's a fan of the recording artist or anything. While working, he needed to take care of some business. No, not that business. Voting season. Ignoring the real election, because it became even more of a joke in the future, think Idiocracy. He does vote in the Oasis. He voted for Cory Doctorow, who? And Will Wheaton. Surprised that there was no Felicia Day mentioned here. He talks about the future practice of the personal Oasis VidFeed channel. Many use it as an actual POV broadcasting their life. Others use it as a pet kid cam. And still others, of course, go the adult entertainment route. He chooses to show old TV shows, movies, commercials, music videos. And I suppose I could have summed it all up as pop culture smorgasbord from the 80s. He mentions that many of his viewers are Gunters, who view in hopes that he would give away hints. Artemis shows girl power shows. He uses this time to mention that she made good on her promise to cut all contact. In spite of that, he talks about all of the stuff that he contrived to do to try to get her attention and, parenthetically, hopefully make good. How long until he... Oh, there it is. The say anything... He tries to reconnect with H. Things just aren't the same, as you would expect. It makes sense with them being young, but I've gone a bit without seeing friends and we just fall back into our normal habits. Their last conversation between Wade and H ended with a shouting match. Wade rubs the help he offered in H's face, then lets it go too long without apologizing. With only Dido and Shoto, he accidentally forges a tenuous friendship with them. He finds a high-level quest on a Japanese-speaking world. He doesn't speak Japanese. Dido and Shoto agree to play through the quest with him, a recreation of the original TV series. They get to play through as each of three main characters in the series. They take turns being in the role of the main protagonist of Ultraman. Even with the three of them working together, it takes them a week of playing 16 hours a day. When they get the reward, a capsule that allows the user to turn into Ultraman once a day for 3 minutes, they need to figure out who gets it. Shoto says Wade should. Dido disagrees. Wade, trying to preserve the tenuous alliance, agrees with Dido. Unlike the Sixers, Dido proclaims Wade a man of honor for letting them have the artifact. The end of the chapter gives a day in the life of working Wade. Because he never had money before, he blew through his sponsorships quickly and needed to get a job. He made some money selling commercials on Wade Vision and selling loot, but still needed to work as tech support. When he spoofed the new identity, he included a fake history of a degree, several certifications, and a record coding for Oasis. Even so, he can only get a job at the help desk. He hates the job. Calls it his own private virtual hell. Think the IT crowd, but without a witty coworker to help you through the day. His shift crawls. After it ends, he unceremoniously logs back into his personal Oasis account. Ceremony, however, awaits. Artemis found the Jade Key. Chapter 21. This is bad news. Very bad news. Yes, because she beat Wade and takes first place, but also because of a potentially tragic turn of events. The Sixers got their hands on a powerful artifact. Findor's tablet allows the user to quote-unquote find another avatar. Depending on the location of this user and the target, you might have to use it a couple of times to pinpoint the exact location. But also when used with the scoreboard, it allows someone to easily find the location of the keys and gates, making it among, parenthetically, if not, the most powerful artifacts in the Oasis. The release of the artifact opened a huge bidding war. The old story of unlimited resources means that IOI wins. They now have the ability to find each successive key and gate shortly after anyone else does. They can also use it to attack their competition. But the daily limit prevents that. They're not that petty. At least not yet. Sixers converge on Sector 7. Therefore, everyone else on the hunt followed. However, because the sector contains many worlds, there are still men a search for the exact location. Wade takes a look at the scoreboard and gets a big sad again. He berates himself for not being the first to find the Jade Key. He goes in pretty hard. I'm not proud to say this time that his self-flagellation mirrors my own. He then goes on to say he wants to find the key and beyond to finish the hunt and have Artemis talk to him again. Like, okay bro, let it go. But, at least, it focuses him back on the quest and arguably what he does best. He opens his file and centers the quatrain. Reads it again. He considers Draper, Captain Crunch again, and ultimately comes up empty with that line. Some plan is named for hackers, but none after him. Closest lead is a statue on a small world named for an old Usenet group, Alt.Freaking. But that was made after Halliday died, so it really doesn't help. Focusing on the last two lives, he stumbles on a planet called Arcade, spelled A-R-C-H-A-I-D-E. It took me forever to figure out that it was called Arcade. I think I was doing like Archide or something stupid like that. Whatever. Which happens to be in Sector 7. It also has replicas of many of the trophies won by Halliday. Inspired once again, he gears up, sets the ship to travel to Arcade. As an aside, his ship is a replica of one from Firefly, named for Vonnegut. He gets some points there for Vonnegut. On his way out, he passes several stalkers and hangers-on. He loses them in lightspeed travel, and then orders Max to take a Stargate, because they are in a hurry. The chase is on. Chapter 22. Arcade's surface looks like the old vector graphics of the late 70s and early 80s. Green lines crisscross through green dots, in a tribute to the Death Star from the 1985 Star Wars game. Wade needs to do some combat prep, as it is a PvP zone and a chaos zone, so shit might go down. He lands and puts the ship in a bubble. The horizon, such as it is, looks like a bunch of zigzags. Supposed to be mountains. They never come closer on approach. Perspective is not a thing here. Wade heads towards one of the green dots, the tunnel to the inside of the planet, and the museum. The tunnel gives me flashbacks to a specific memory from childhood. Literally. The book Name Checks, Pour Some Sugar on Me by Def Leppard. I remember sitting at a gauntlet machine in Putt-Putt's Arcade in Erie, Pennsylvania, and singing along to that song. I must have cleared a level in some connection with the song and emphasized by hitting both the lyric and the joystick with a magnificent flourish. The museum is a perfectly rendered graphical recreation of the typical arcades from the past. Aforementioned Putt-Putt Mall Arcade type places I talked about fondly in a Twitch stream the other day. Bowling alley, and pizza places. They all exist within a labyrinthine network of tunnels, trapdoors, and elevators. As you get closer to the core, you go further in the past until you eventually arrive at a replica of the second video game ever created by the nerds over at MIT. I kid. Also because I'm jealous, I wish I could have gone to MIT. In a future life. Wade, like most of his peers, combed all of Arcade and found nothing. This trip looks to be no different. None of the trophies in the museum can be budged, let alone collected. Even so, he tries to cut one of them free on the off chance that something budges to reveal a secret or a clue. No dice. He decides to shake things up and take a different route back to the surface. He stumbles on a large cavern full of arcades. One catches his eye. A place named Happy Time Pizza. It resembles a pizza place from Halliday's hometown. Wade remembers Halliday wrote about it in his almanac. He used it as a way to avoid going home after school. Wade goes in. It looks as you'd expect a pizza place to look. NPCs tossed dough and sold slices. Apparently, if he felt hungry and ordered, a place would deliver it to him in real life. He It wanders into the game room. A Robotron high score belongs to, quote-unquote, Rooney Eats It. Further in the room, he sees a Pac-Man machine between Galaga and Dig Dug. It has an out-of-order sign on it. Wade wonders why you would include a broken machine, then supposes it's just detail to enhance the realism. Still, he goes to investigate, takes off the sign, and realizes that the machine is unplugged, so he plugs it back in. It boots. In the corner, he sees a coin, parenthetically, code for next, from the past, but he can't retrieve it. It's stuck. Weird. Also, the high score is at 3,333,350 points. As close to a perfect score as you can get. Also weird. Wade knows that he has to beat that score. Obviously part of the hunt. Has lightning struck our intrepid hero once again? Only one way to find out. He goes for the score, failing a few times, before finally getting into his zone. I will spare you the details. You can find them in the book. Eventually, though, he does it. The quarter releases and bonds to him in his inventory. And nothing else. But H comes through to pay back the debt owed. A message with a high-resolution photo of the text-based adventure Zork. The key on the picture? A large white house with windows and doors boarded up. A dwelling long neglected. Well, shit. Wade went on his way to find the planet in the sector where there was a recreation of Zork. And now for my reaction. We get away from sad guy Wade and back to the hunt, thankfully. Sure, it takes a chapter, and we get a recreation of his futile attempts to win back Artemis's attention, complete with the cringe say anything. Peter Gabriel, Hail Mary. But she gets the last laugh, parenthetically for now, by beating him on the scoreboard and waking him up from a stupid man-baby tantrum. I gave him the benefit of the doubt for a couple of chapters there. I even mostly gave him a pass here. I know what it's like to go through a breakup, and not to fall too much into quote-unquote that guy trap. Traditionally, men lack the emotional resources necessary to navigate the complex emotions that they experience after such a breakup. Yes, things are getting better, and we are, parenthetically, maybe too slowly, removing the stain of toxic masculinity. When something is so firmly entrenched in a society, though, it takes a while to dismantle that machine, no matter how hard you rage. I mean, hell, even the fact that I've spent the better part of this book checking my bias while thoroughly enjoying the book shows that some progress has been made. Hey, I get it. We all know we can do better. We should have been doing better all along. It's frustrating that any of this was normalized and for so long. And like I said, it sometimes feels insurmountable. People get tired. In my travels and during my research, I see and hear so many people say how tired they are at having to fight. I just came across a quote-unquote memory post on Facebook about how tired I was after the George Floyd killing. I can't imagine the feeling of living that reality every single day. Oh, look, some more discussion of identity bled into this one before I reveal my major topic for the episode. I won't reveal it yet, parenthetically. Hey, I'm getting good at this quote-unquote no spoilers, but it's a new one. Due to spoiling myself with the movie and through a question I looked up when I thought H might be Halliday, I'm saving online versus in real life for another episode. I think I might have missed my chance for capitalism, but a subtle mention in this chapter says maybe not. And I think the hating what you loved will come up at some point too. Sorry, back to my point, then the main point. I know that when I get pulled over, even if I get mouthy with the cop, that I will walk away from the encounter alive. If I'm polite, I usually get no more than a warning. I have anecdotal evidence of both. Most recently, I was driving Aiden to soccer in my car that I haven't had inspected for about 2 years. When asked by the cop, I shrugged and basically just admitted that I didn't do it. The cop let me off with a warning and a kind hope that we made it to soccer on time. When younger, I mouthed off to a cop and only got a quote-unquote, keep your mouth shut, son, instead of a get out of the car, followed by a gun to my back. So yes, I understand my privilege as a white man. I also realize the bias, implicit and explicit, in our society that perpetuates that privilege. But I hope I proved myself as an ally, parenthetically, possibly awkward, but still trying, as established last episode, and a safe space for all. The point of this is that I probably gave Wade more leeway in his nonsense than some of you. He and I have shared experience. Hell, I just wrote about one where I literally experienced what Klein wrote about with Pour Some Sugar on Me. Nevertheless, I respect and understand you who see things differently and maybe even take offense to the book and some of the characters. Now, That brings me to the main theme of the episode. When he talked about elections and name-checked Will Wheaton, it made sense. Wheaton made a name for himself after Star Trek as an everyman geek. I wrote parenthetically, "Who the hell is this?" when he mentioned the other guy. Surprised that Felicia Day wasn't mentioned at all. Especially, and no offense to Mr. Wheaton, but Felicia Day does stuff. She created The Guild, one of my favorite shows ever, in Geek and Sundry. She hosted Critical Role there. Again, I mean no offense to Mr. Wheaton, especially when, parenthetically, as far as I know through limited social media interaction, he's highly private and introverted. So I don't begrudge his conclusion. But putting that Doctorow guy there instead of her is an insult and short-sighted at best. I'd even argue some implicit sexism at work. While I searched to see if she was included earlier and I missed it, or she makes an appearance later, the answer that I can see is sadly no. In that case, I got nothing. No defense against that. And that, kids, is how I met Gamergate. Look, I'm not completely ignorant of the phenomenon. As a gamer who spends a significant amount of time online, I heard of Gamergate. Heck, I even unfortunately witnessed some of the crimes committed. I know that among the 14-year-olds in most Twitch chats, it became a running gag. I also, because some of those 14-year-olds know of the concept of a quote-unquote fake gamer girl and the judgment that comes with that label. Both younger and in no way ready to be an ally, parenthetically, other than, hey, my mom is a feminist, so by extension, so am I. I never spoke out against the allegations. Now I recognize it as abuse, and I speak out. I know, big hero. White knight. Look, I'm not trying to get accolades, simply showing that I've grown and I've changed. How are these two things related? When I searched for Felicia Day's part in the book, a secondary search called the quote-unquote Felicia Day incident led me down a mini rabbit hole. I have no idea if this is the quote-unquote incident, but apparently some streamer questioned her bona fides and his legion started to bully her as a result. Okay, y'all, if this is the type of shit to come out of Gamergate, then I see the stupidity of it all. Like most online controversies, I thought it was just a troll art project that got out of hand. Boy, was I wrong. Seriously, what the fuck is wrong with people? First, who made you the arbiter of what is and is not authentic? You remind me of the sports pundits who scream about hustle in the heart of an athlete without having played a single meaningful, parenthetically, and honestly, are any of them meaningful in any sport? Just because you've watched something doesn't mean that you have any claim of expertise in that thing. And Googling will only get you so far. In fact, in most cases, it won't get you very far at all. Besides, most of the time, you're arguing opinion. It is not an undisputed fact that the new Star Wars movies suck. Likewise, you can't say that new Disney is quote-unquote woke without expecting some discussion or counter-argument. The same goes for who is or isn't a true gamer. Everyone approaches games from a different angle. Take two people and something as simple as Magic the Gathering. You play cards, attack your opponents, and try to win. Simple, right? Well, Chris's friend Jason looks at the game from an economic standpoint and likes older cards better as a result. As a collector, like Jason, I appreciate cool or interesting cards. However, I collect mostly modern, parenthetically, as a more current, not the format, cards, and put them in binders for display. I don't give half a shit about the economics of the game. As I said to him, Magic is a game. I don't get mad when my Scrabble investment doesn't pay dividends. He tried to explain the difference. I responded as politely as I could that I don't care about quote-unquote real economics. I certainly won't care about the daily ups and downs about the value of a Grizzle brand. I think we left it at difference of opinion. I mean, that's where I left it. We haven't talked much since, so I don't know where we stand. And therein lies the point. You or your friends or your favorite streamer don't get to decide who is or isn't quote-unquote real for the rest of us. Living in a post-apocalyptic capitalist hellscape, the decision is made by our billionaire overlords, and they only care about who makes them the most money. Yes, I realize that I'm late to the party, and ultimately spinning into the wind. However, I still see some of this stuff in the community. Now, though, I feel more prepared to call people out on their bullshit. Ultimately, guys, we're just trying to get along in the sandbox. I don't understand why we constantly fight against each other and our best interests. I think we'd be better served by working together rather than trying to outdo one another all the time. Then again, if nothing else, I think I proved myself as a lefty, loony, communist, hippie freak cuck. Of course, I would spout quote-unquote woke nonsense like sharing, cooperation, and respect for your fellow humans. P.S. If you're not a capitalist, you're the capital. And they do everything they can to keep their human capital. And on that slightly depressing note, we've come to the end of this episode. Thanks always for listening. You can find us, if you haven't already, at www.twoguysgaming.net. We have articles, linked to our socials, including our YouTube, which has the daily RPG calendar. I'm back current with that. I also put up a Hearthstone video that I took the other day. I had to take it on my phone because I couldn't find my screen capture software. So it's a little janky and there's background noise, but like I say, I'll try to find a better way to record. It usually works in the room here, but I was downstairs and I just thought of recording it and posting it. So it's a little janky, but it's still a fun video. I will be back on Thursday with the next episode of this to cover the next three chapters. And then the episode on Saturday or Sunday will cover two chapters because it'll take us to the end of part two and into part three. I will talk to you then. Bye, guys.
We are Two Guys Gaming.